When I got this assignment, I was a little surprised. And you know, as is often the case, you go out and you start to look at the commentaries and read through Bible student materials, and one of the commentaries says, this is perhaps the most difficult chapter in the entire Bible to comprehend. And therefore, in the next 12 minutes, we will go through the most difficult chapter in the Bible. The thoughts I'm going to offer are not dogmatic. They're going to be my observations and based on the readings and writing of the pastor and other thoughts and discussions. And what we really want to do is raise awareness and also raise the brethren so that they'll start to discuss some of these things. So we want to offer it in that spirit. And we'll entitle it Armageddon Cliff Notes. The first thing we thought we might do is ask a series of questions. And these are the questions that, you know, if we go to other conventions or you hear the brethren talking, they always ask for. When you talk about Ezekiel 38, what are the questions they ask for? In fact, you might indicate by raising your hands if you would ask this question. Who are the nations involved, right? That's always one. What is the spoil and the prey? That's another one. Will Israel's borders expand? Will Israel be at peace? And when will it happen? So we thought we would completely cover those five questions plus some other insights. And we're not necessarily going to answer them in the order in which we pose them. First of all, this 38th chapter of Ezekiel, I think as everyone is aware, is really gives us a tremendous amount of background on the battle called Armageddon. And, of course, that term comes from not Ezekiel 38, but from the 16th chapter of Revelation in the 16th through the 21st verses. And we'll just read just a little because we have just a little time. And he gathered them together in a place in the Hebrew tongue called Armageddon. And so we realize this is that plain of Megiddo, which is in kind of northern central Israel. And also we have an account of this same event in the 14th chapter of Zechariah. Once again, we won't go into detail on there, but it's in many ways a parallel account and fills in some of the other facts as well. So the first question we had was, who are the nations involved? Well, I'll give you a list, but you know, if you talk to the brethren, some of the brethren are going to have a different list. And I think that's a good thing because I think we should discuss these things and try to delve into it. And we'll suggest as we go through, we have in Ezekiel 38, 2, Son of man, set thy face against Gog and the land of Magog and the prince of Meshech and Tubal and prophesy against them. And then as we continue down in the fifth verse, we have mentioned Persia and Ethiopia and Libya. And then sixth, we have Gomer and Togomar. And so we'll just offer some suggestions here. And these are based on a number of discussions with brethren. We'll suggest that the land of Magog is the Russian area. And what part? Well, you know, that kind of changes, doesn't it? If we'd given this 12 years ago, it would have been the Soviet Union, but today it's Russia, and who knows what it's going to be tomorrow. But we realize, of course, that it is this area, and in fact, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal has an allusion to the what is now known as the area called Moscow. And then we mentioned Persia, which we feel would be the Iranian area. Once again, it's an area. Ethiopia, probably northeast Africa. Libya, probably areas of North Africa. Gomer, the suggestion is here that it's some of the Eastern European bloc. But once again, we can't really be dogmatic as to exactly where that would be. And then finally, the House of Togomar, which is currently Turkey. And that's kind of an interesting one because they're currently a Western ally. And yet it appears as though they may be involved in this final great conflict. Now that's the first collection of nations. If we go all the way down to the 13th verse, we've got another group that comes in, and they're kind of on the side. And they're listed as Sheba, Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish, and the young lions therein. And the suggestion there is that Sheba and Dedan was those in the Arabian Peninsula, and the merchants of Tarshish were the Western nations and perhaps the Western European nations, which are more affluent and more in the nature of economic powers. Now, what's the problem with putting labels on these nations? Because there's a problem involved here. And first of all, many of the references are a little bit obscure and not definitely known. You know, as you read through different commentaries, they'll come up with slightly different answers. So we really can't be dogmatic on it. Secondly, it also assumes that we have a definite time frame. But you know, if you look at the map today, it's not the same as the map was 5 years ago, and it's not the same as the map will likely be in 5 years from now. So when we talk about the nations, I think we're getting a general area here. And we assume somehow when we're doing this, another point is that we have some kind of continuity in these nations, and that's not necessarily so. If we look at the Balkans right now, who would have known that it would have split the way it's done? So we can't necessarily assume that, because when is this going to happen? Well, I agree, it's future. So what will be the status then? And finally, the thing that would lead us to say, don't try to be dogmatic on these nations, is there's some statements made like, in the land of, and all his bands, here's again, all of his bands, many people, with all thy bands, and so on and so forth. So throughout the scriptures, and this is in Ezekiel 38, it talks about others. Who are those others? Well, once again, you can't be dogmatic. The dynamic is going to determine who those others are, and we're not given to know. What we do know is that the main aggressor comes from the north. We feel that it is likely, probably something to do with the area of Russia. And, you know, when we look at what the pastor did with those, he kind of related them back to who they were the descendants of. He kind of dealt more historically with it. So we'll leave that at that. Now, will Israel's borders change? See, we're almost out of time. Yes. No. We'll try to be a little more exact than that. There are some indications that Israel's borders are yet to expand, and that this is an ongoing process. There's some indications that they will expand to the river of Egypt or the brook of Egypt. And that's an area not a whole heck of a long distance from where their southwestern border is today. In fact, it's kind of interesting when we look at that, because, you know, they had the whole Sinai. And why didn't they give it up back to the brook of Egypt or the river of Egypt? They gave it back a little bit farther. And I think that's so that they've got to go back and get that again. It's not a tremendous amount of land. It's just a little sliver there. And we find allusions to that for both in Genesis 15 and also in Zechariah 10. And in Zechariah 10, it kind of gives us some insights that they're going to have some additional expansion. Let me go back, though, and read in Genesis. It says, "In the same day the Lord made the covenant with Abraham, saying, Go unto thy seed. I have given this land from the river of Egypt unto the great river Euphrates." And if we look back to the land of Israel in its glory days, it did have a sliver that went up all the way to the river Euphrates. And so we think that there will probably be some reestablishment of those borders as well. And then in Zechariah 10, it says, "I will bring them into the land of Gilead and Lebanon, and place shall not be found for them." Now that's kind of interesting, because it once again shows us that they're going to get into Gilead. Now Gilead is the area that we would currently call the East Bank. We always hear about the West Bank, but he's talking about the East Bank. So that would indicate that there's probably going to be a change here. And in modern contemporary history, they haven't had the East Bank. So this would indicate that this is probably yet a future event. Once again, we can't be tremendously dogmatic on this. So we realize that there will be some expansion. Now, if we look at all of the areas we're talking about expanding into, Lebanon, and the East Bank, which is Syria, and down into Jordan, into Gilead, which is the area of the Golan Heights, and into Egypt. If they did all of this expansion, they would expand into Egypt, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. Now, who is the consortium that's coming down against them? Well, by golly, it looks like every one of those is listed, except for Jordan, and that may be one of those other bands. So that's kind of interesting as well. Realizing that if we look at the history of Israel in the 20th century, that they've averaged wars since their establishment as a nation about every 9.5 years. So we realize that they are due. Just a couple of weeks ago, they withdrew from the buffer zone in Lebanon. The Christian militias there collapsed. Now it's really quite dicey there. We've got Syria wanting the Golan back. It's a dynamic period. But we think that there'll be an expansion. Will Israel be at peace? Well, that's an interesting thing, because if we look at Ezekiel 38, the indications there are that they will be at peace. Not only will they be at peace, but the likelihood is they will also be seemingly disarmed. Because it's not only saying that they shall dwell safely and be at rest, but they won't have bars nor gates. Now, this is not the condition we find them in today. In fact, if we look at how they've expanded every time, it's involved a war. Now, in the Middle East, fortunately, wars can take 6 days, 3 days. I mean, they tend to be pretty quick. But we realize that there's still likely to be some kind of big change that will occur so that then they can dwell in peace and safety. In fact, some of the other references that we don't have time to state right now indicate that they will dwell solitarily. Now, that's kind of interesting because right now the thing is, you know, make a place for the Palestinians in the midst of the land. That may be changed. Now, what is the prey and the spoil? Oh, the Bible students love this because we love to try to figure out exactly what it is. And we could say just briefly that spoil, by and large, is a plunder or booty, or it's what you can carry off. In the same way, if we look at what Iraq did to Kuwait, what was the spoil that they took? It was all the stuff they could carry off. So they carried off their money and all of their goods and their cars and whatever they could take away. And the prey, of course, is kind of a term where we would go down and track down and kill either animals or people. We realize there are those that will be focused in on that as well. But it's also interesting to note in the 12th and 13th verses, there's not just those two things. That's what we always focus in on. But there's a couple other things. It says that they're going to look at those upon the land in the desolate places. Well, these desolate places aren't so desolate anymore. So they're going to try to recapture that land. That is now the breadbasket for fresh fruits and vegetables for Europe in the winter. It's a fertile place. In fact, I was out on a NASA website trying to get some idea of Israel, and I noticed that that southern border, it's as though someone drew a line in the sand. You can see exactly where the border is because it has been reforested and planting and so forth. On the satellite image, you can see exactly where the border is. So they're going to come and take from the land. They're also going to take people. We've seen a tremendous exodus from the Soviet Union. And their intelligentsia, we're told by Ken Rawson, there's like 4.5 million Jews left, more than they thought. There's a big influx, and it's the intelligentsia that are coming in. The nation of Israel today has the highest per capita educational level of any nation in the world. Kind of interesting. So we think that'll be part of it as well. So they're going to want to take those people back. And they will take, of course, their cattle and their goods. So that's a little bit of we think that as a part of this, this is also indicating there will be tremendous prosperity in Israel. I think we're seeing the start of that today. I don't think it's happened yet. I think they will be the envy of the world in much the way that Japan was at the end of the 20th century, right? Japan has no resources, little country, very productive, wonderful place. I think that's going to happen in Israel. And we have indications that they want to come and get this great spoil from Israel. Now, when will it happen? Future. We're out of time. But we know that the conditions that must happen, first of all, Israel will seemingly be at peace, probably be disarmed, and they'll be under some kind of arrangement to where they won't need arms. And you go, well, Brother Bob, what kind of stretch of the imagination could do that? Well, brethren, look at Japan. It's exactly the same arrangement. Right? They don't have a military force. The United States is their military force. Germany is very interesting as well because they have a very limited military force. So it may be that there'll be some kind of giant shift in borders due to a war that somehow they'll come to a consensus that Israel will be walled off and left alone, and then they'll be dwelling in peace and safety. That's what the scriptures are indicating. Once again, it's just an indication. They will live solitarily. And somehow the Arabs will be off of our stranglehold with this oil. Somehow the Arabs are going to be kind of in the background and not in this picture. Israel will be prosperous, and that's necessary for the spoil and the prey. In fact, we feel that they'll probably be super prosperous. I think they'll be the envy of all nations. If you look at who's coming down versus who the merchants of Tarshish are, if you look at who's coming down, we would call them second-rate economic countries. Think about that. And in fact, when you look at the hook that's described in Ezekiel 38 that the Lord's putting in their jaw, it's greed. Because you look at everything they're coming down for, it's all gimme, gimme, gimme. It's not what they should be coming down for or what they will come down for in the kingdom. And their borders will likely expand. We can't be exact, but it looks like there'll be another expansion. There'll be at least one more major conflict. And we think that there will be a major shift in the balance of power, probably dealing with economics. Now, when we look at all of these things, one of the things on this chart, favor returned to them. And I want you to note, when you read Ezekiel 38, God says, I will. He's taking charge. The Israelis don't really know that today. They have some idea, but he's taking charge. He says, I will bring thee against my land. I will sanctify thee, O Gog, before thine eyes. I have spoken it. I will set forth my fury. I will call for the sword against him throughout my mountains. I will plead against him. I will rain upon him and his bands. I will magnify myself and sanctify myself and will be known in the eyes of many nations, and they shall know that I am the Lord. So in Ezekiel 38, the beautiful thing for us is God takes over, and there is no doubt. May the Lord add his blessing.